Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 30th, 2016, and this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. I'm back. It is 42 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. We're supposed to have another snowstorm coming, they said. I don't know, those polar vortices. The polar vortex is coming. And it's supposed to sweep down over the Great Lakes, which no longer have any ice. And I don't think they really got too much ice this year. It didn't get too cold. So I guess we'll see, but it's kind of putting a damper on the kids' vacation. And we were supposed to go do some stuff this week, but I don't think I want to be traveling if there's going to be a lake effect snowstorm in early April, because those can be the pretty nasty ones. Heavy, 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 deep, wet snow. All right, where did we leave off on Friday? We titled the show 21st Century Honeypots, AI, VR, Sexbots, and McD's Happy Goggles. McD's Happy Goggles. I should have called it Happy McGoggles. McDonald's, if you remember, is putting out a Happy Meal box with virtual reality lenses type things in them. I don't know. I've never seen one. Limited edition in the Netherlands, I believe, for now. But you can fold the box up and slide your phone in there and then go to the new free Pornhub VR porn and sit on any subway next to any unsuspecting business traveler and get your fill of VR porn. A lot of disturbing stuff we talked about last week. Lots of 21st century encroachment on not only our personal liberties, but on the environment, on our bodies, in all of our cells. And I think we're probably going to continue somewhat along that vein today. I don't know. I had to kill everything this morning and start fresh because you know how it is. My computer now doesn't work if I leave it for more than a day unattended. So we're starting off fresh, but there were some definite stories I wanted to get to today. A couple from this weekend that hit the UCY feed from some of the publications that I feed in there. One being Natural Blaze, which is Heather Callaghan's website. Another being Antimedia, which is Nick and SM Gibson, Claire Burnish, and all those guys we have on. So let's take a look at this. Natural Blaze. So this is from March 29th, yesterday. We talked about this so many times, the dopamine dangling carrot, and I struggle with this on a daily basis here at home with my child. Keeping them away from those devices, those 21st century devices that cause that push button to happen in their brain, that addictive push button that's like the Pavlovian dog, the mouse in the maze chasing after the cheese. You know, they are using not just the television, not just the video games, not just the high fructose corn syrup, but many other things to be able to manipulate us by pushing that dopamine button. And we've looked time and time again at all the different research that's been done out there. DARPA's grand poobah in regards to brain research and pushing those dopamine buttons in regards to creating their own quote unquote super soldiers, as they call them, where when they in the future are able to sense that the soldier is stressed out or hesitating or having some sort of psychological issue on the battlefield, they want to be able, and we've read all this, they want to be able to push a button and to be able to release brain chemicals that will then overcome those fears or overcome that hesitation. Story came out in IEEE Spectrum the other day, implantable chip, and we brain surgery live on National Geographic TV back 3-4 months ago, implanting a chip into a Parkinson's patient. And oh, how do you cure Parkinson's? Yes, you produce dopamine. Yeah, that's exactly how they do it. So they put this little dopamine pump or dopamine electrical, I think it was actually the electrical stimulator, into this person's brain so that at any time they started having symptoms, just push that button and you can get some dopamine. Well, here's a story on a mouse. Implantable chip measures and adjusts dopamine levels in mouse brain. And you know, the thing is, if you weren't paying attention to all the things that we've looked at, all of these would seem like separate incidences that had nothing to do with each other. They're like, oh, great, look, we're working on trying to find a device that you can implant in someone's brain who's mentally ill, who has Parkinson's, or who has PTSD, to be able to cure them. But that isn't what it's all about. When you back up and you realize that we have this global brain project going on and we have all of our universities and all kinds of big brain scientists getting sprinkle money from DARPA to come up with all of these technologies and to figure out how the brain works and to figure out how to put implants in there to be able to read neurons. And then you back up even more and you start taking a look at what Google's doing and IBM and Microsoft and how they all have their own AI projects going on and they're trying to recreate a human brain. They've created artificial intelligence that can now teach itself without any human intervention. And oh, by the way, we now have robots that evolve on their own. The picture gets to be very, very scary. And now, in the middle of all this, these new Oculus Rift goggles come out, and they are just being shipped. The first shipments we read last week just started going out. Oculus Rift purchased by Facebook. Zuckerberg saying that it's going to be the new future way that we experience the world is in 3D goggles, 3D VR goggles. But as all this other stuff is going on around us, I don't know if we're going to be able to get to some of this extinction level crap that I've been reading. But guys, I got to tell you, I actually was pretty weepy here this morning. Some days it's just really hard to deal with. But I can see so clearly what they're doing. They don't want you. I mean, all this political circus bullshit. I've never been into any political bullshit. I hate liars and cheaters, and I just don't believe any of them because they all tell you what you want to hear. And when they get in office, they do what they were going to do in the first place. They don't have to keep any of their promises. There are no laws that say if they promised you a pony that you're going to get a pony. What was his name? Vermin Supreme. No offense to Vermin, of course. But, you know, there are no laws that tell them they have to keep their promises. So they just spout off shit to get people to wave their arms and go, oh, you're the next second coming, and go vote for them. But when they get there, they just wreck it even more. And we're at the point where people are starting to go, what? How come everything is such a disaster? How come, you know, jobs are dropping and food's going up? And oh, what? You want to get rid of all the labeling? Oh, what? You want to not tell us what poisons we're eating? Or that the robots are coming and they're going to take off our jobs? And we've pretty firmly established that over the last few weeks. No, don't pay attention to that. We'll just make sure that we give you guys your universal basic income. You put on these Oculus Rift VR goggles. Go do what Kurzweil said and expand your mind. Go to the free VR porn site. That'll keep you occupied, Johnny. And in the meantime, all those fixtures they ripped off the walls and chucked out the back door into the van, they're driving off with them now, heading to China. I don't know where they're heading for their bunkers. I don't know where they're going with it all. Because they got all those dominoes lined up on that big table. And they're getting ready to flick it. And when they flick it, it's going to be the biggest calamity that we've ever seen. And oh my goodness, all of us helpless people that have been sucked into these machines and now depend upon them. Because guess what? Dopamine is the addiction chemical. So as they suck us into the TV, into the VR, into the video games, into the high fructose corn syrup that's in just about everything we eat if it's not organic, we all have this addiction that they can dangle that carrot and get us to follow, like the Pied Piper. Porn's another one. Gambling. It's just, and you know, actually up here, there's a lot of casinos all over. That's like the big new growth market. Actually, I just read a story about a high school not too long ago that had their big senior job fair, if this isn't like the writing on the wall. And there was one company that showed up for the job fair. And apparently, I don't know, they were the ones that arranged the whole thing. But like the school couldn't even get any more employers to show up. And the one company that showed up for the job fair was one of the local gaming companies that had a whole bunch of casinos. And they gave the seniors, the 18, 17, 18 year old kids trainings on how to deal, how to man a craps table, and got them to sign up for jobs at the casino. What? Why? I could not compute that. Since when has there been a job fair where we're going to have our children aspire to be dealers at a poker table? This is the ultimate dumbing down, absolute rip out the guts of America. Anyway, so they now have this new implantable chip that adjusts the dopamine levels and the electrical signals. And of course, that will give them more knowledge on how to be able to eventually manipulate and control our dopamine levels with precision. So back to the original story, Natural Blaze, research, and we knew this. And it's not just TV, it's TV and the video games. I've been doing my own 10-year research project here with it. I see it very clearly. TV is intellectually and socially dumbing down young children, and that is very true. It is common for parents to feel that their children are spending too much time in front of the television. And according to a Canadian study, children who watch an excessive amount of television exhibit a multitude of negative side effects, including poor language and social skills, as well as increased bullying. Now, I'm going to tell you what else I noticed. Once they've been in front of the TV, it seems that they have a lot of difficulty not only paying attention, but following directions and being argumentative. Like when you ask them to do something like, all right, can you pick up your Legos on the floor now? and you're going to get the just a minute, and then you're going to get the no, and then it's going to escalate into an argument. But trust me, I've been doing a lot of my own experiments. It only happens after they've been exposed to one of these dopamine eliciting devices, whether it be TV, a video game, or just the computer in general. Otherwise, at least in my particular case, the kid doesn't exhibit any of those defiant behaviors. Back to the story. In 2013, a study was set out to determine whether or not viewing television at 29 months, which is about 2.5 years old, was associated with school performance at 65 months, or about 5.5 years old. The study, which was conducted on 991 girls and 1,006 boys with a parent and teacher-reported data, came to this conclusion, quote, increases in total time watching television at 29 months were associated with subsequent decreases in vocabulary and math skills, classroom engagement, which is largely determined by attention skills, victimization by classmates, and physical prowess at kindergarten. These prospective associations, independent of key potential co-founders, suggest the need for better parental awareness and compliance with existing viewing recommendations put forth by the Academy of Pediatrics. Now, you know, another thing that I've experimented with is the type of programming, and we all know that for a long time they've been fully well aware of flashing lights and subliminal messaging and that type of thing. I mean, that's been happening for generations now on the boob tube. But I've also noticed that if you do like an hour of science programming, that was our big thing for a while, doing an hour of science programming after dinner as a family, watching, you know, some space thing or some physics thing or whatever, it actually did not affect her as strongly, let's say, because there was never an argument. Time to turn the TV off, time to get ready for bed. You know, that's the way it went. As any of the cartoons, and I'm going to say especially from the Disney Channel. Oh, my God. You know, I've sat and watched some of that stuff myself just to see what they're pumping into children's heads. We all know about Disney and some of the hearsay out there. I mean, I've read some pretty disturbing things about the whole Disney organization and MK Ultra and all that crap, you know, from the Disney, whatever they were, the Disney troupe. And I truly think now, especially looking at some of the DARPA research that they're doing with memories, being able to insert and erase memories using flashes of light and things with the brain, I really don't doubt that they're not doing something to the kids with the way they make those cartoons themselves. I could tell you, when we go visit Nana and Grandpa, and I know this sounds kind of horrible, but they have a parrot. Parrot is, we've had him probably 30 years, and he was probably 20 or so years old before that. But the parrot spends time in his cage, not in his cage, but on his cage. He won't go in his cage. And my dad puts on cartoons for him. And of course, when we're there, the cartoons are on. It's kind of like a magnet. And every time I can't find my kid, I turn around and she's down the hall watching those horrible Disney cartoons. And every time we are at my parents' house, we have discipline issues and behavioral problems. And I am certain that it is those Disney cartoons. I have nothing good to say about them at all. And if you've never watched the Disney Channel or some of these 3D animated bubble creatures that they have running around, try it just for a little while and see how your brain feels afterward, because it's very disturbing to me. Anyway, back to this. According to the study, Every 1.2 hours of television viewing for children and 29 months old resulted in poorer motor, vocabulary, math, and social skills, and even an increased likelihood of being bullied, as television inhibits the development of self-confidence. And really, I mean, when you look at what the television or the computer does, it feeds you information. And though, at least on the computer, you have to go seek it, on the television, the most seeking you have to do is to go to the guide and pick a channel, but it's feeding you data. So, of course, it's going to inhibit you from developing the self-confidence to come to your own conclusions and then go find supporting evidence for that. This is just telling you what is true, quote unquote true. And that's what's happened to our culture. We've been brainwashed by the mainstream. This is where this cognitive dissonance comes from. We've been taught to trust what comes out of the idiot box. We've been taught to trust what comes out of the authorities sitting behind a news desk. But as we expose them more and more, and really it is more and more like, what was that movie called with the sunglasses? Them? Is that what it was called? Carpenter's movie? The sunglasses, when they put the sunglasses on, you see that they're like these alien creatures. I mean, that's pretty much what it's like. There are some of us who've taken off those blinders or put on the x-ray goggles to be able to see that this is all just a big fat lie. And it's been a big fat lie for a really long time. Good old Frank Zappa said it years ago that when the game is over, they're just going to pull the curtains back, turn off the lights in the theater, and all you're going to see is the brick wall, because that's all that really is there. It's all an act, and everything is a stage. Study also notes that many parents seem to be unconcerned about how long their children spend watching TV. I also have found that parents seem to be unconcerned about all the garbage that their kids are ingesting in the processed foods that they feed them, all in the name of convenience. Oh, it's easy to buy them the TV dinners and the plastic dish with the plastic cellophane and stick it in the microwave for a minute and a half, so your kids can have their genetically modified corn cooked in plastic for dinner. But that's okay, Johnny. He'll grow up just fine. Don't worry if you bump into a few walls. We'll get you some of those newfangled Google contacts they have. I mean, how disturbing. What has happened to the world? You know, these children, and this is something that I've been trying to do every spring, summer, and fall, is get outside. I don't give a shit. Don't turn on that TV. And if I see that computer, I'm going to break it. And that's pretty much where it's at right now. Trust me, it's vacation week. I lost it yesterday. That computer is like heroin, okay? Especially to a child. And Minecraft, I don't know if you guys have seen that. I don't know much about it except that I've heard, there was some show we had on here and this one chick, that's all she had her kids playing was Minecraft. Oh, and it teaches them so much. Yeah, and it sucks them into the machine. And now Google, or Microsoft, one of them, was using Minecraft to teach their artificial intelligence. Don't trust anything like that. They could be teaching your kids anything. You know, and all these people go in and make these mods, and then I see that there's Minecraft and they're killing each other. What? That's not appropriate for a child. You know, if there was anything that we learned from video games, all those naysayers tell me 20 years ago that video games don't desensitize children. I'm going to say bullshit now, because here we are 25 years later and we have these teenagers playing Grand Theft Auto and they don't think anything about hitting someone with a car, rape, pillage, stab, rob. You know what? Because it's all been normalized now. It's entertainment. There's no moral divide anymore. It's entertainment to see someone get robbed, raped, and killed. How beyond disturbing is that? What have we done to these future generations? But guess what? These are the future generations now that the world is so fucked up that, hey, there has to be some major change. Hey, we're going to have a major calamity, and don't worry about it because we already have a plan, the 21st century green agenda 21 world of trying to fix the planet with synthetic biology is coming, and we'll give you your little chip that you can then wave and get your free universal basic income to buy stuff because there won't be any more jobs. But don't worry about it because you'll be able to sit around with your VR goggles, do VR porn, and think about philosophical things. I mean, that's the future that we are now getting ready to hand the next generation. And we should be proud. Not proud. I'm very disturbed by this. And I'm telling you, I shed tears over this sometimes. It's just, how did this happen? The study also notes that many parents seem to be unconcerned about how long their children spend watching TV. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that children over age 2 do not watch more than 2 hours per day, and that children below the age of 2 watch no TV at all. Presumes that the content is age appropriate, of course. Also interesting is that as the American Academy of Pediatrics finds educational television to show positive effects on children while watching non-educational cartoons, fast-paced cartoons mainly lowers their attention span. And yeah, I think those flashing lights give them ADHD. I really do. It does some messed up thing. And actually, as a matter of fact, it just reminded me of a study that I posted a few months ago on my personal Facebook page about how they have now discovered that by flashing lights from a slot machine in front of a rat causes the rat to get addicted to the flashing lights. So what does that tell you? That means that as these children have these flashing lights in front of their faces, they're going to get more and more addicted to the machine. It probably pushes more dopamine buttons because dopamine is the gambling chemical as well. It's why Parkinson's patients, when they get treatment for Parkinson's, which is give them more dopamine, a lot of Parkinson's patients end up as problem gamblers. Look it up. But it prevents them from paying attention to the things that are important around them. It prevents them from paying attention to eating, going to the bathroom, sleeping, listening to their parents, doing their homework. Because you know what? If anyone, and we've talked about this before, if anyone's ever been addicted to something, and I mean addicted to something, I mean cigarettes, yeah, they're an addiction. But then there's much stronger addictions out there. I don't know, cigarettes are pretty rough. But, you know, think about something like cocaine or heroin or something like that. When you're a junkie, there is nothing else but getting the next fix. And this is that same behavioral pattern. You don't give two shits about washing yourself or about making sure your elderly mom has groceries because you want to get your next fix. That's all you're about, is getting that next fix. And we're making our children into junkies. Viewing time as a child also indirectly affects the child, the study notes, at a time when brain growth and development are heavily dependent on external stimulation. TV viewing takes away from the time that the child will spend with more creative and social activities such as family or imaginative playtime. And yeah, I mean, again, this is being fed information versus using the imagination inside your head to create scenarios and work through things with your own mind. You know, that's the one thing. Yesterday, the whole situation that prevented me from doing the show yesterday morning, after we had the computer incident first thing, the day was spent playing Lego. And I mean, it was a big disaster. The whole living room was full of Lego scenes. But you know what? There was an entire day of imaginative, highly creative play that happened after that. And we did not have one one issue with not listening, not paying attention, arguing. It just didn't exist. And that's what I've seen time and time again. In front of the TV, in front of the computer, is behavioral issues galore, where I just can't even stand it. I mean, it pushes me to the point where I am ready to just completely go off the deep end. Because it is so maddening that these tools And they are tools. Television can be a tool. A computer can be a tool. But when they're not used appropriately as tools and they're used as babysitters instead, they cause major problems. And, you know, it makes you wonder why 70% of the American population is on drugs and 50% are on antidepressants. And we have all these children that are on these SSRIs for ADHD. Where do you think that's all coming from? And why do you think the parents are feeling depressed? I got to tell you, it's a really horrible thing when all you do is have to keep reminding them and the kids aren't getting it. And you can't figure out why. And you're like, where did I go wrong? It's these devices that are doing it. However hard it can be, it is becoming ever more clear how important it is to engage young children in more intellectual and social activities rather than just the sedative task of watching television. Yeah, you think. Perhaps encouraging them to play, imagine, and follow their own intuition will give them broader opportunities in life, both socially and intellectually. And I mean, like, it's so beyond common sense. But you'd think that people would realize this, but they don't. They absolutely don't. I mean, anyone who I know that has kids, that's all they do. Those kids are in front of the TV. It is consume, consume, consume. Dangle that dopamine carrot. Buy them all the toys they see on TV that those marketeers are marketing to those young minds. Give them everything they want. Don't make them do anything. Don't make them have any responsibility. They don't have to make their bed. They don't have to clean up after themselves. You don't challenge them with having to cook for themselves even. You do everything for them. And then you wonder why you have a 35-year-old living in your basement that is completely incapable of surviving on their own. And that continues on. There's a story out of Anti-Media. And again, common sense, but I see it all over. Children now spend less time outside than the average prisoner. Now, when we were kids, back in the 70s and the 80s, in the summertime especially, first thing we'd get up, my parents wouldn't even be up yet. Well, my dad, he worked nights, so he wouldn't be up. But my mother, she'd still be, you know, working on getting herself going. But we would be up at like first light, getting dressed. Didn't matter if it was still cold outside, even in June. I was out there in shorts. There's dew all over the lawn. We had about 15 kids on the street. We were all around the same age within a few years. And that's all we did. First thing in the morning. Didn't even eat breakfast, out the door. And we were playing. We had marbles. We played hide and seek. We had our bikes. We swept. I don't know. We had Fisher Price stuff. We had swing sets. Everybody had something. And we occupied ourselves for an entire summer without our parents ever having to get involved. And, you know, we'd come in when our parents would call. We'd get something to eat quick, or maybe even we'd eat it out on the step because we couldn't be away from our friends. And we came in when the streetlights came on. That's how it went. And all we did was play, 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 interact, and play. And now, in my neighborhood, I don't know, there's probably, again, 10, 15 kids all about the same age where I live now. I don't ever, 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 ever see a kid outside. Ever. I've been here 15 years now. I don't see kids outside at all. I see them get on the bus and all go to school. I see the bus come and drop them all off, and I never see kids outside. Anyway, the story is by Carrie Wedler from Anti-Media. Prisoners the world over are characteristically defined by their inability to move freely. Inmates at the Wabash Maximum Security Prison in Indiana, however, were recently shocked to learn that about one group that enjoys less time outdoors than they do, and that would be children. A global survey conducted on children's time outdoors quickly became an ongoing campaign called Dirt is Good. After the findings showed a concerning lack of outdoor playtime among children aged 5 to 12. The results of the survey, commissioned by British laundry company Persil and conducted by an independent marketing research firm, revealed that one-third of British children spent 30 minutes or less outside every day, and that one in five does not play outside at all on an average day. The researchers surveyed 12,000 parents spanning 10 countries the United States, Brazil, UK, Turkey, Portugal, South Africa, Vietnam, China, Indonesia, and India. And the Dirt is Good initiative was founded based on the survey and the short film of the same name, which features interviews with inmates, reports that on average, children now spend less time outdoors than a prison inmate. According to Dirt is Good, inmates receive at least 2 hours of time outside every day, while most children enjoy an hour or less. The inmates interviewed in the short film expressed the importance of outdoor time. I think, quote, "I think this is probably the most important part of my day," says one inmate. "It keeps my mind right and it keeps my body strong," explains another. Yet another calls his time outside, quote, "pretty much the highlight of my day," unquote. The inmates were then asked, "How would you feel if your outside time were reduced from 2 hours to 1 hour per day?" And they answered, quote, "I think it's going to build more anger. It's not going to be a good thing." Another says it would be torture, while a guard says, "I think cutting the offender's outside time to 1 hour a day is potentially disastrous," unquote. So, I mean, listen to this. And our children, because they're sucked into the dopamine-producing devices, don't see any type of benefit to going outside. They don't want to go outside because they're addicted. They're addicted to the devices. They're addicted to the computer, to the video games, to the television, and the flashing lights. What is that doing to them? They are losing complete and utter connection to the planet. And you know what? That's very convenient for those that are out there destroying the planet, number one, and deciding how they're going to create the synthetic biology to fix it all. Oh, how convenient that nobody is paying attention anymore. The Dirt is Good campaign's comparison between inmates and children is particularly fitting, considering critics of public education have pointed out the criminalization of school spaces and the resemblance of schools, at least in the United States, to heavily regulated prison environments. The Washington Post summarized in an article about children being forced to sit still in class. The problem, children are constantly in an upright position these days. It is rare to find children rolling down hills, climbing trees, spinning in circles just for fun. Merry-go-rounds and teeter-totters are a thing of the past. Yeah, because, whoops, they were too dangerous. Oh, my God. Recess times have shortened due to the increasing educational demands. And, yeah, I think I found out that it's like 20 minutes they let them go outside at school. Maybe. And children rarely play outdoors due to parental fears, liability issues, and hectic schedules of a modern day society. And that's very true. I mean, it's not parental fears even. How many stories have we seen over the last few years that someone let their kid walk down to the park a few blocks away, and the next thing they know, they got CPS at their door and the cops coming to take them away for child abandonment, take them away for supervising their children appropriately. I mean, you do have to worry about freaks because there are a lot of freaks out there. But I don't know about you. We used to walk a couple miles down the road and go shimmy down a cliff to the beach when I was, you know, 14. And nobody knew any different. Thank God we didn't die. But hey, the kids do things. You know what I mean? It just, to me, it's what does that say about what we have done, not only to our children, but to society as a whole, when you can't even let your kid go play out in the front yard without your 24/7 hovering over them. And, you know, that 24/7 hovering teaches them to become codependent so they can never go out and do things on their own. They can't think for themselves. They can't do anything for themselves because they always have someone there telling them what they have to do. It's just, it is such a psyop. It is so damaging. And I don't see any way around this. I mean, I've tried so hard. We completely disengage from even home in the summertime. Outside, get dirty, run around. Let's go see animals and trees and go identify wild plants. I mean, that's what we've been working on. And it's great when we're gone, but then you have a long winter and you're stuck inside. And God, it's seriously, it ends up like a mental disability being locked inside. The Post conducted its own study on several classrooms with seemingly hyperactive children who had trouble still sitting still, finding not just a lack of movement, but physical ramifications from the lack of activity, noting that many children are walking around with underdeveloped vestibular balance symptoms due to restricted movement. The Post columnist Valerie Strauss argued that in order to develop a strong balance system, children need to move their body in all directions for hours at a time. Just like with exercising, they need to do this more than just once a week in order to reap the benefits. And I'm going to take this even a step further and say not just their physical body, but their mental. You know, when you have them being fed information 24/7, they're being fed information and not being taught to think for themselves or to use deduction or logical reasoning or to draw conclusions. Your brain is just like any other part of your body. You don't use it, you lose it. You know, I wrote, I went to college and got an English degree, and I probably wrote 300 plus papers. And writing is one of those things that if you don't use it, you lose it. So is vocabulary. If you don't use it, you lose it. And your brain, thinking, deduction, logic, putting two and two together and making sure that it's four to prove it to yourself, those are big things that need to be done often. Otherwise, you don't use deductive logic anymore. And I think, again, that's a lot of what is happening to our society. That's why you see some of these bullshit stories where they can wave the magic Kreskin wands and all of a sudden, bloop, oh, look, there were the 9/11 hijackers, you know, all had something to do with Iraq. Let's go bomb them. That's how stuff like that happens. You know, that's how these amazing orchestrations can happen, and they can tell you any lie, and we've all been conditioned to believe it. And nobody questions it. They just accept it because it's being fed to you. It's become a habit. You've become addicted. It's that dopamine push button. And you just absorb it and say, okay, and move on with your life. Whatever the cause in children's reduction in outdoor time, whether it be excessive rigidity in schools, increased time on electronic devices, ding, ding, or parental fears about their children's safety, for example, experts agree that it is a big problem that must be addressed. The Dirt is Good campaign has launched a variety of initiatives to encourage outdoor play, including Empty the Classroom Day, scheduled for June, and tips for parents on gardening, outdoor excursions, and other ways to increase outdoor activity for children. The Dirt is Good campaign is chaired by two well-respected doctors who specialize in children and physical activity as well as creativity. One prisoner said, and this is the end here, quote, "I didn't know what freedom was until it was taken away from me, and it is devastating. I've had who I am inside stripped away, and you can never escape the wall. You can never escape your mind. And then imagine they open the door. You have time to walk out that door and feel the sun on your face. That is everything to me." And, you know, that is what we need to be instilling in our children, is the love and the beauty of nature. Going out and not only feeling the sun, but smelling the breeze and appreciating the insects that are all dying. Appreciating the birds that are all dying on the West Coast. The ocean that's all dying. The coral reef that, oh, what is all dying? 95% bleached and half of it will be dead within a month, the newest report says. It is all happening before our eyes, people, and nobody is noticing. JJ dropped a story this morning, and this is pretty much writing on the wall. A third of young Canadians would prefer a robot boss. Yes, of course they would. Open your arms. Technology will save us all. Mad science gone mad. Human bosses suck, but they're a necessary evil of society, and they exist for one reason: to make you work. And God, we know how these new generations hate to work. But there are good bosses and bad bosses, and at their best, bosses fulfill their function without frustrating you too much. But at worst, they steal your wages and pass you over, whether you work for a massive company or for a mom-and-pop operation does not make much of a difference. It is no wonder that so many young Canadians would rather a computer program do the job, 31% be exact, according to a new survey of more than 2,000 Canadian adults by a Vancouver-based consulting firm. Cognitive bias, which is a very human condition, can make our jobs quite tough, says Nicholas Badman, a Canadian futurist and biohacker who helped write the survey questions. But some people, like HR managers, kind of need to get out of the way so a better job can get done. And yes, just like we've been talking about, 50% of the jobs are going to be going to robots and software. Well, I guess the boss job will be one of those on the list. At least in Canada. Some people, like HR people and managers, kind of need to get out of the way so a better job can be done. According to the survey, 31% of Canadians age 20 to 39. And that is the age group right there. Agreed that an unbiased computer program would be more ethical and trustworthy than a human boss. Careful what you ask for. They also have no feelings, and they will fire you without having any emotions. You have 12 kids. Oh, well, sorry, because you know what? We can't afford you anymore. Bye-bye. 34% said they would rather be hired by an unbiased computer program, and 33% would prefer to be assessed by one, and 26% said they would prefer to be managed by a robot. The survey findings appear to lend weight to previous studies that have suggested people would be open to being bossed around by a computer. Yes, our future overlords. But if you pay close attention, you will see where that survey makes a massive leap. Remember, Canadians were asked if they would trust an quote-unquote unbiased computer program, which, I mean, of course you would. I wouldn't. You know, let's take a look at the Google self-driving car, quote-unquote unbiased, quote-unquote ethical, that's going to decide to kill you as you're careening out of control toward a brick wall instead of making a quick turn to get out of the way of the wall but potentially running over people on the sidewalk. You know, I don't think I like those odds at all. But if you pay close attention, you could see where this survey makes a massive leap. Remember, Canadians were asked if they would trust an unbiased computer program. And the better question is if a computer program can ever be unbiased in the first place. After all, humans make computers and humans are full of all sorts of ugly preconceptions about the world. And here's something we talked about. I told you this was going to happen. Thinking, writing, computers doing things on their own, AI coming for you. What do we need people for? A novel written by AI passes the first round in a Japanese literary competition. And this author, and this is not me speaking, says, I, for one, welcome our new AI overlords. It's coming, people. It really is. All the big tech companies are working on AI, and it's way, way, way further than anyone is admitting right now. We've run into that time and time again, just about every story we do. It may be a bad time to add novelists to the list of professions under threat from super smart computer software, but because a short story authored by artificial intelligence has just made it through to the latter stages of a literary competition in Japan, it did not scoop the top prize, but that is not bad effort for a beginner. And remember, we just read about the Google AI that beat four out of five Go games. Go is that Asian game that is 1,000 times more complex than chess. And you know, I would be pretty concerned that not only is AI beating our experts at things, but AI is teaching itself to learn, and robots are evolving themselves, building the next generation of themselves. This is not a good thing at all. One or two submissions from the university made it through the first round of the Nikkei Shinchi Hoshi Literary Awards ceremony. Perhaps the entry's title, which translates as The Day a Computer Writes a Novel, should have been enough to tip the judges off. But the competition is unique that it openly accepts entries from non-human writers. Of 1,400 or 50 or so novels accepted this year, 11 of them were written with the involvement of AI programs, and this four-stage screening process is kept secret, but judges are not told in advance which submissions are written by actual people and which have robot authors behind them. Science fiction novelist Satoshi Haas, who was involved in the competition, says that the AI book was well-structured but had some problems as well, including the quality of character descriptions. So far, AI programs have been used to solve problems that have answers, such as Go. We talked about that in Shogi. But in the future, they would like to expand AI's potential so it resembles human creativity. And, you know, that's the one thing that they're still saying, hey, don't worry about it. AI and robots will take 50% of all the jobs at least over the next few years, 5, 4, 5, 10, depending on who you talk to or read. But the one thing they'll never replace is human creativity, because, you know, it's what we're going to do. Sprinkle us universal basic income and we'll all be sitting around eating grapes fed to us by robots. Expanding our creativity, and we will always be more creative than the bucket of bolts. Well, not according to this. They want to expand AI's potential to include human creativity. And if you've seen the Google AI's dreaming illustrations that they put out there, they're pretty damn creative and very damn horrifying. Creativity is hard to emulate inside of a computer, but it's surely only a matter of time before AI programs have the intelligence and the data to be able to do a passable job. Automated software is already responsible for writing certain financial and sports reports, so the key facts can be arranged in a straightforward template. Political speeches are another target for up-and-coming robot writers, just like the RoboPen. They can write them and sign them and tend to follow a familiar pattern with repeated phrases and topics. And as is usually the case, the database the AI has to work with is crucial. As long as there is enough data to draw upon, then today's AI software is clever enough to produce its own variations on a theme. All right, well, I think we're going to end up on one of these. I don't know. Tomorrow, I guess we'll have to do some more Kurzweil and Mad Science Gone Mad, but I ran across this one on the weekend. And this one I didn't quite see coming. It's 2026. Let's just imagine. That's only 10 years from now, if you can even believe it. And 10 years goes in a blink of an eye. And I would say it's going to be even less than 10 years from some of the stuff I've already seen. It's 2026. And anyone in this room could be a hologram. And this came out of Gizmodo. This will suck you into the machine even more than you are now. And in the picture, the guy has on some Oculus Rift goggles. Holoportation, it's called, is now a thing. So start slapping everyone in arm's distance to make sure that they are real. This new technology by Microsoft's research uses 3D motion capture and the Microsoft's HoloLens. So that must be what he has on his head. Still, it's VR goggles. Mixed reality hardware to holoport people from one place to another, which is definitely going to contribute to a universal feeling of paranoia in the future. How do I know if you're a real person that's in front of me? The technology can be used live, but you can also create 3D recordings that can be scaled and played back at will, meaning Star Wars style, holo messages inching closer to reality. And they are talking about Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. If you remember, it looks in this diagram, this illustration, this, I don't know, it's an animated GIF, actually, they have going here. It's exactly what it looks like is the scene out of Star Wars where they reduce the size of this little girl. It's just unbelievable. This new technology uses 3D motion capture and Microsoft's HoloLens cameras can be placed around the subject capture to capture them from every angle, allowing this system to create a rendered model, which is a gray, blocky version that sort of looks like a character from Reboot. But then it gets textured and more closely resembles an actual human before, most impressively, that data then gets compressed and transmitted with reasonable fidelity to a new location. How is it possible to send that much data is beyond me, considering YouTube videos barely work on my shitty Comcast Wi-Fi. That's what the guy says. But the future is absolutely coming. And like Zuckerberg said, virtual reality is going to be our new reality, and the world is going to be very much like the Matrix. All right, and one last thing. I guess we'll go here. Personality traits, and this is kind of where we ended up on Friday. Personality traits can be revealed by movement, study shows. So as we have surveillance everywhere, cameras around our houses even now, on our computers, in our televisions, in the video games. Now we have these new HoloLens VR goggles coming where we can put them on near our brain and our eyes. They probably have some sort of gyroscope in them to be able to tell which way you're moving and how you're acting. Personality traits can be revealed by movement. Study shows a pioneering new study has revealed how an individual's movement can give unique insight into their inherent personality traits. And remember, pre-crime is something that they don't talk a lot about. We've covered it quite a bit on this show, and they're doing a lot of it already without our knowledge in different cities. I just saw something about Seattle, I believe, the other day. Groundbreaking study could open new pathways for health professionals, of course, to diagnose and treat mental health conditions of the future. Mental health conditions that we've created with our own technology by feeding it to our children. Team of experts, including those from University of Exeter, has shown that people who display similar behavioral characteristics tend to move their bodies in the same way. And this new study suggests that each person has an individual motor signature, a blueprint of the subtle differences in the way they move compared to someone else. Using a mirror game in which two players are asked to imitate each other's movements, the team showed that people who have similar movements will tend to display a more organized collective behavior. And again, that's a disturbing term. Collective behavior, we've looked at uploading to the cloud. We've looked at computers learning and uploading their learning information to the cloud and being able to share that information in a collective and then move as a swarm. I don't like where this is headed. Add to that Kurzweil with the nanobots in your brain to connect you to the internet, and we can see where this is all headed. The team believes that a person's integrated movements and how they interact with each other could give insight into their mental health conditions and so pave the way for their personalized prediction, diagnosis and treatment in the future. And when we add now to that good old Tommy Insel, the former head of the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, going to Google to find ways to diagnose mental health issues through smartphone apps. Well, now it looks like they're working on just using cameras to be able to do that as well. We're all going to be on medication at some point in the future. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live. Up next, Josh, live at 6 p.m. Eastern. The Boys from New York at 8. Liam, chef at 9 p.m. Eastern. Antimedia with Nick and DB at 11. Everyone take care. I'll catch up to you tomorrow.